Don Jensen joins us, longtime Sabre member. He is part of Johns Hopkins University. You know, that's in Baltimore. He lives in Alexandria, Virginia, and he gets a good look at the Orioles and the Giants. Don, how are you this morning?
Great, Marty. Thank you for having me on. I would add a native San Franciscan and Giants fan to that description, but thank you, and nice for having me on.
What did you think of the game last night?
It was awful. It was awful. And I get the Giants and the Orioles and Nationals on cable every day, and I try to get the Giants off MLB. And so it's been a depressing summer season so far, but the Giants are my love going back to childhood, and just reading about Sandoval online while I'm waiting for the interview. So I'm not in a good mood, but I'm not unique in that, and maybe they'll do better tonight.
Well, we'll see. They face a guy who's given up 18 home runs and seems to get lit up a lot, so we'll see what they can do. But
I hope so.
Need their pitching, as you know, in baseball. By the way, since you're on the line, I'll give you the lineup for today. It's Panic, Yastrzemski in right. Posey is the DH today. Sandoval is at first base. Belt is in left field today. Longoria third. At shortstop is Crawford. Vogt is the catcher, and Pillar in center field. So that is the Giants lineup today. And I thought maybe Austin would be in there today to load up another righty against Hess, who seems to get lit up. All right, let's talk about your book. It's put out by McFarland, and I really enjoyed it. It's a collection of essays that you've edited and put together. But take us through how this came about and this series of books that you've put out.
Sure, it'd be my pleasure. I'm one of those kids who grew up in the Bay Area not being good enough to play like my father, so I had to do this. About 12 years ago, John Thorne, who you may know, official historian of Major League Baseball, put together a journal called Baseball, Two Words, which tried to compile the very best in research about the game, and we focused on before 1920, and it's academic but not geeky. I think the stories are very interesting. It's a labor of love on my part, and about 2 years, and McFarland puts it out, as they do for a lot of great baseball books, and about 2 years ago, John, who's, as you know, very, very busy, decided he wanted to give this up. He turned it over to me, and it's been a labor of love, as I said, since then. I make a plug, if anybody's listening, I'm always entertaining and looking for new authors. But we focused on the game before 1920, and a lot of the contributors, Marty, are Sabre members, and Sabre has a reputation of being number-crunching, and I almost said geeky, but there are a lot of Sabre members who like good writing, good sports writing in the old tradition, and we just use modern historical methods. And John is very much the godfather to all of us, and our journal tries to incorporate the very best in baseball research, and I think we do that. I've got another version coming out for this year, going to the publisher McFarland in a couple of weeks, and have been fiddling around with the illustrations all week.
Wonderful. Well, it's Baseball, Two Words. I'm glad you pointed that out to me, because I always put them together. Baseball 10. It's new research on the early game, edited by Don Jensen, who's with us today. I love it. I started reading it this week, and it's one of those books for me. I like books I can pick up and just start reading at any spot, because I've got so much going on here during the week. But give me a couple of your favorite ones in this book that sort of grab you.
Sure. I have a number of favorites. And I would say, Marty, that you know the informal motto is baseball history is history. So we try to incorporate not only stories of games and seasons and teams, but we try to incorporate social trends, you know, women, ethnic groups in the game. And so I try to vary it. And in this one, I have a couple of favorites. I think probably the biggest, my favorite is the article by Robert Fritz. I think it's from the Bay Area. It's about the Waseda University visit in 1905 to California, one of the first great baseball tours by Japanese players. I think the first. You know, growing up in San Francisco, Marty, I always thought Lefty O'Doul introduced baseball to Japan, but very clearly, as Robert Fitz, Mr. Fitz points out in the article, it was the Bay Area team visit by Waseda came in 1905, and they played Stanford and Cal and a lot of clubs up along the California coast. didn't do all that well, but they were greeted with a huge amount of racial abuse and stereotypes and ethnically, what we would call ethnically insensitive nicknames in the Chronicle and the Examiner and other newspapers. And the play here by the club, here in the Bay Area, by the club, I think broke down a lot of those stereotypes. They were well-mannered, well-behaved, good ball players on the field. They didn't hit particularly well and lost most of the games. But I think in terms of looking at the social aspect of baseball, that is my favorite in the volume. For just fun stuff, I highly recommend the article we have about Gabby Street, who is a catcher on the Washington Senators and that great summer of two great pennant races, 1908. And he also was brought from the Seals previously. He played for the San Francisco Seals. And he was the first man to drop a baseball off the Washington Monument with evidently, it was the 13th attempt. His friends brought 13 balls up to the top of the tower. And it was the 13th he finally caught. And it said that the sound of the ball hitting his mitt sounded like a gunshot because the ball traveled, according to measurements, about 95 miles an hour.
So let me get this straight. Gabby Street, he's a catcher, and he eventually became a manager of the Cardinals.
He did.
And
he
also
did.
The broadcaster for the Cardinals with Dizzy Dean.
Did.
So he is the Washington Monument. This is like, what year is this?
1908.
All right. So he's got his buddies up at the top of the Washington Monument. They've got 13 baseballs. He says he's going to catch one. And they got to figure out how to get the ball down to him that doesn't hit the monument so they can get it to him. And on the last try, he puts his hands above his head like he's catching a pop-up. And
exactly.
It hits his glove and just about knocks him to the ground, 95 miles an hour, and he gets it done. Gabby Street got it done.
And he got it done, as you recall from the article, by after 12 failures, moving to the other side of the monument and throwing out the catapult that shot the balls out. And his friends just threw it out there, and he caught it. And you know how hot summers can be back here. I think it was a relatively mild day. So when he got to Griffith Stadium a bit later, he got applause when he entered the ballpark. And it was for catching the ball, which had already circulated the news wires, not for his generally good defensive performance for the Senators past few days.
Yeah, to conclude that story, and I've heard this one before about Wilbert Robinson, of the Dodgers. He was a catcher and became a manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers as well. He had a big fight with John McGraw and left the Giants. And he tried to catch a ball that was thrown from a plane, except they threw a grapefruit down and fooled him and it hit him and he thought he was dead.
He thought it was blood and it was merely citrus. it's good to know that Robbie and McGraw patched it up, but you know they had a very stormy and tumultuous relationship.
Look, it's so funny because everything comes around. Don Jensen is with us today. Baseball, they love getting some colorful stories of players, and look, this was going on way back then, and they were sort of marketing the game in a crazy way, not like today with internet and all the media we have. But even then, they were trying to get some interest away from the ballpark. And there's another older player who tried to market himself. And he was, I think he was in the big leagues for one shot, but he played for like 15 years. And somehow he ingratiated himself to the Reds to get into the big leagues.
Yeah, that's Charles Krause, who played one game with Cincinnati, but had a career as a umpire, baiter, narcissist, mediocre hitter, and other things, fighter on the ball field for about 15, 20 years. And he would just travel throughout the Midwest, the Illinois League, playing in Michigan and Detroit and other places, and managed to hang on for an awful long time. I'm not going to compare that to any current ball players, but clearly if he had an agent, he probably could have hit 25 years in the game. But he had to do it himself. He was very successful at it. And by all accounts, kind of a nice, nasty character to be around. a very interesting story. I like to cover obscure players as well, Marty, and we have a couple profiles coming up in the next issue of people who had a drink of water or a cup of coffee in the Players League in 1890 and so forth, and then disappeared again. If I could mention one other of my favorites,
please,
which is about Joe Sprague. I'm sure most people don't realize how early organized baseball took place, including in San Francisco, but the first legendary superstar, think of him as a 1860s Koufax, was a guy named Jim Creighton, and Creighton had a masterful curveball, a moving pitch at the time, and he was 21 or 20, 22, and he retired the vast majority of players in Brooklyn he faced in about 1860, 1861, and he died from a ruptured abdomen at a very young age in a game. And the issue has always been for historians, was it a game? Was it because he was playing cricket, as some said, or because he was playing baseball?
Huh.
And this debate between cricket and baseball is a huge divide in early sports for Americans. And baseball won over competing sports like cricket, partly because of its perceived Americanness. So you have this whole Abner Doubleday myth of him inventing the game in New York. There was very little realization, which people realize now, that there were a lot of bat and ball games around, and a lot of them were played in England, and one was called cricket. And so this issue of who could master the sport, Creighton being an early superstar, is talked about a little bit in the journal. And his great rival, think of it as Marischal and Koufax, his great rival was a guy named Joe Sprague. And one of my friends, Eric Miklich, who does reenactments in Long Island of 1860s baseball out in the field on Sundays, argues that Sprague was better. But Creighton was the first great superstar. He was probably paid illegally, since most ball players were not admitted professionals at the time. And this whole debate about what is baseball, why is it seen as the national game, is a theme that we come back to in the book, in the annual book, in many articles and from many different perspectives.
Well, the book's fun. The book is fun. Baseball 10, edited by Don Jensen. Don, McFarland has it. McFarland Publishing, and the Book Tree up in Montclair. David will get it for people. Any other places to get it?
You can get it from McFarland directly. It's at Barnes & Noble, at least by order. And you can get it also on Amazon. And as I said, this has been on the market for about 11 months, Marty. The new one will probably come out in a month, maybe 6 weeks, with a new collection of articles. And I'm already working on the 2020 version and have about...
Good for you.
4 or 5 articles ready, and that should be very interesting.
Good for you. Yeah, send me the new book when it comes out, and we'll have you back.
I will,
again.
Marty. I promise. Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, Don, thank you so much. Have a
All
good
right.
day.
Thanks, Marty.
All
thank
right.
you. Bye-bye.
All right, Don Jensen, Giants fan in Virginia, but he knows his baseball. More coming up right after this.